Hey, welcome to Getting Work to Work, a weekly podcast for creative professionals and entrepreneurs looking to grow by learning new things, getting inspired, and breaking down the barriers that prevent them from doing the work they were born to do. Welcome to the third installment of the Design Week Portland series. Every Wednesday for the past few weeks, I've been releasing interviews with directors and artists and people associated with Design Week Portland. This week, we're continuing the series. I'm Chris Martin, and you're listening to episode 150, Interview with Rebecca Gates. With interests in cities and citizen engagement to sound, space, music, and art, Rebecca is an independent artist, curator, and problem solver, blending leadership skills with a deep belief in listening. In this episode of Getting Work to Work, Rebecca and I talk about her event at Design Week Portland, From a Whisper to Machines, her fascination with voice, what listening means to her, and all things Design Week Portland. Show notes and links for this episode can be found at gwtw.co/150. Getting Work to Work is brought to you by Chris Martin Studios, a media production company telling stories with heart, edge, and fearlessness for those who dare to build a better world. Keep in touch with Chris Martin Studios by signing up for the Curiosity Lab, my weekly email newsletter at gwtw.co/150. By doing so, you receive inspiration on Mondays and Fridays with ways to increase your creativity, curiosity, and wonder. All right, you ready for this interview with Rebecca? Let's get into it. Rebecca, thank you so much for being a guest on Getting Work to Work. Why don't you start by introducing yourself and share a little about what you do?
Thanks. It's my pleasure to talk with you. I'm an independent musician and artist. I also work as a curator and moderator, and I do experiential design work. I do a lot of different things, but they all sit at the place of sound and listening and voice and community place.
Your Design Week Portland event about the role voice plays in our lives, called From a Whisper to Machines, sounds fascinating. Now, are you talking about audible voices, such as recordings, a voice as point of view, a voice in written form? How are you defining voice?
We're looking at it from a couple different facets. Most of it is actual physiological spoken voice, but we're also looking at civic voice and activist voice. Of course, in this moment, it's a good chance to kind of tease apart authenticity around voice and technology implications on voice.
Interesting.
Yeah, I think that it's going to veer in a lot of different directions. Voice is a really nice node to work from. Points of exploration go in a lot of different directions. So.
Yeah, for sure. How is authenticity communicated in voice?
You should come to the panel and ask that question. We can figure it out. I mean, I don't have an answer for that, and that's something, but it's something that we're coming up against culturally, politically, you know, in terms of news and technology around news and around just communication. There's also Laura Alcorn, who is one of the people who will be presenting that night and be part of the discussion. She has a artwork that she just installed in Ireland called the Synthesizer. And it's looking at the difference in sound between a fake laugh and a real laugh. And she speaks quite eloquently about that. I can send you some information on her project and her talking about it if you wish. Yeah, so it's something that we're just kind of like turning over, thinking about.
So what was the inspiration to learn more about voice?
Well, the world is a rich, complicated, and interesting place. And I find it's interesting for me to start looking at broader and larger questions from a perspective that I'm more familiar with. I'm a singer. I've put out a number of records and led bands and worked in music in a lot of different ways, different modes over the years. I've done radio, podcasts. So I live with a voice that I use publicly and and as a point of expression. So I think it's just a really interesting piece to work from. it's something that most of us live with in an actual, like I said, a physiological expressive sense. And I think it's just a really great place to start teasing apart larger issues and hearing how different people think about something that's seems very specific, but once you start pulling it apart, is just very multifaceted and really complicated.
As you're talking about voice, it makes me think of one of the things that people often say when they listen to a recording of themselves is, oh, I hate the sound of my voice.
Right.
Why do you think that is?
Probably a lot of judgment involved, a lot of lack of, you know, low self-esteem. We hear our voices inside of our own bodies. And so to hear it completely external, it sounds different. And I think that there's that sense that people think, oh, that's not me. Is that really what I sound like? Is that who I am? And voice is very much an identifier, the same way that, you know, a physical presentation and, you know, all of that is. So I think that's such an interesting phenomenon, how yeah. scared and worried people are about how they actually sound.
Yeah. And even just, I think not only how we sound, but what we're saying, mm-hmm. there's often that disconnect there of like, this is what I'm thinking here, but when I say it out here, I'm coming across entirely wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, there's a lot of disconnects, even to the point where I learned a lesson very early on, and it's something I still work on, where someone transcribed an interview that I did around the first record that I put out a long time ago, and they left in all the likes and wells and ums, mm-hmm. I think in an attempt to make it more personal, mm-hmm. you know, I was horrified. So even I think in terms of that, even if the content is making its way from our brain, like out into the world, and we don't mind just the sound of our voice, then frequently there's the pauses or the paces, how people think, the ums, like wells, mm-hmm. that are horrifying.
It's funny how we think that including those, you know, comfort words and repeater words and the words and the phrases that we use think that it makes us more human.
Mm-hmm. I think that that's just a disconnect between people's experience of reading in print and then listening. I could suddenly start being like, well, I mean, because I am. Like, I grew up in Oregon and I'm from the West and I'm going to not really move my lips very much when I talk because that's our accent. We don't really have an accent, but like when I go here, you know, and actually hearing someone say that when you're trying to get content, trying to get thoughts across, that's really ineffective. But mm-hmm. keeping those into a printed mode is just completely disruptive.
Interesting.
Or at least that's my perspective.
Yeah, that's good. So what do people usually misunderstand or get wrong about voice?
That's a great question. I don't know if there is anything to get wrong about voice. I think one of the things that we will be talking about is, again, like authenticity and truth and real and what is real about a voice. And so there might be, I guess in that way, it can be seen as wrong. Yeah, I think, you know, that there would be an assumption of experience when in fact that's actually not what's really happening.
I'm thinking about, I remember reading a story about Roger Ebert when he lost the ability to speak and he had to create a computer program that would speak for him. And I remember it was something to the effect of he didn't want to use his actual voice that he had before losing it because there was a disconnect there. And so they had to almost make it more computerized. And so that gets me thinking just about human voice versus synthetic voice and what the differences are there.
So in the artwork that Laura has put together and that she'll discuss, she's found that people perceive a sped up fake laugh as authentic. So part of what we're talking about this evening is not only voice, but how voice shifts our perception. And it doesn't necessarily have to be perceptions of reality. It can be perceptions of how a city should work, or, you know, it can be a different, more conceptual perspective. But I think in terms like that, I'd forgotten about that Ebert quote. And also I love that I can't think of it immediately, but he had really lovely things to say about being challenged.
Yeah.
And how that changed his writing and how that changed his film commentary and his movie going. It's super interesting what happens when we lose access to that, or there's, you know, there's a shift. The technology issues that we're dealing with in terms of voice and what is real and this very human corporeal thing that's now being monetized and commodified and codified. And I was just in Austin, not participating in, but listening to a conversation where there was a lot of energy being spent to try and figure out how to get some of those AIs to understand the difference between beets and beets. Hmm. Like if you're talking to Alexa about your beet salad, is she going to try and make drum beets? You know, it's just, that's more language and speech. But, yeah. You know, we are at this point where voice is really a hot topic in technology. And there's still so much we don't know about it away from technology, which I think is also part of its beauty.
Well, it made me think also, too, of something that I think Dave Grohl talks a lot about is just the MP3 as the file format and what it's leaving out, as well as compressing in terms of digital information and how it manipulates the sound.
Yep.
What ramifications does that have on voice?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, it's funny, too, because conceptually, as a musician or someone who's making something that's being compressed and cut and shifted beyond, you know, the mode that you get it to in mastering to say this is done, that's a problem. And I share that concern with Dave. I mean, one of the things that is, but it's also interesting, is that I love the sound of FM radio and I love the sound of AM radio. And those are also not, in a sense, when you're hearing them, like thinking, I mean, I'm an older person, that, you know, hearing that in the car or listening to FM radio in your home, it's like there's that really specific tonal and sonic quality that is great, but actually probably doesn't have necessarily a whole lot to do with what the person actually sounds like if you're talking with them in face to face.
Interesting. As I was looking on your website, I love your artist statement about having a deep belief in listening.
Uh-huh.
And what does listening mean to you? What are you listening for?
Well, thank you. I appreciate your response to that. Listening to me is almost everything. I would say music is, you know, ahead of that, just in terms of how I spend my day. My first memory is of music, but it was of listening to music. I work in sound. I work in sound art, and more like opaque, embarrassingly conceptual modes of thinking about sound as a material. But one of the things that I think is so important as we get to these AIs that are talking to us and we're talking to, and then people are making sound and sound art, music, whatever, is the other side of that is listening. Mm. You know, there has to be silence. There has to be a pause. There has to be someone hearing it. It doesn't have to be, obviously, but like that's a really important component of having a really rich sound-based ecosystem. And I think that listening, especially in this moment, taking it just away from music and sound, is actually, you know, thinking about how we learn about other people's experience and how we learn, period, and how we learn about potential modes of change. Or, you know, it's just, I think it's something that gets kind of short shrift, the way silence gets short shrift. You know, we're sort of more of a broadcasty culture right now. And I think it's partially why people are responding so much in a lot of ways to meditation and to that sort of development of like slowing down and experiencing your own body and listening to your breath. And it's a really powerful place to work from, just in terms of what it can show you and teach you. Hmm.
I like that. Listening requires silence. How do both of those affect voice?
That's a great question. One of the things that made me focus on listening in a mode outside of my own art practice is the, I would say, fetishization of storytelling in brand building and just in terms of people making their workplace work better. Or if it is brand, you know, what's your story? Everybody tell your story. Do your story in 5 minutes. Have a TED talk. Here, you know, where's the conflict? Where's the denouement? Resolve. And it's, you know, and I was like, well, there's every, you can sit around and tell stories, but if you're not listening, if there's not the other side of the campfire where someone's sharing, then what does it sound like? It just sounds like a cacophony. Then I think voice also becomes more nuanced because you might be silencing a speaking voice or an expressive voice, but you're still going to have, as you mentioned at the beginning, like a writer voice or a narrative voice, or maybe you have a philosophical response. You know, you have internal voices that are responding even if they're not speaking. It's really nice to start thinking about the other sides of your statement. All the things that I feel like this sort of pace of our society demands of everyone, you know, just to be able to sort of slow down a little bit and recognize that you have to have those pauses.
Mm-hmm. It's almost like the pause equates to the opposite of immediacy, where we don't need everything immediate. Sometimes we have to work for conceptual understanding. Sometimes we have to work for mastery. Not everything is attained immediately. So that's why we need silence.
No, absolutely. You couldn't have said it better myself. One of the things that we're looking at in terms, we're going to have on the 18th, we're going to have presentations, panel discussion, but Laura and I are also doing some experience design around it, some sort of doing a little exhibition that Silly and requested us to. Yeah, I mean, it was basically this idea of like, can we build out an experience in terms of some of the themes that we're exploring? And one of the nodes that we're building out is exactly what you just mentioned. It's like, not only is it in terms of learning and mastery and working towards understanding, but we live in this space where, looking purely at social media, which unfortunately many of us, you know, or news, or just like high-paced consumption point of view, I guess, you know, you have to have an opinion immediately. It's like something comes out and you react right away. And if you don't react right away, then you are not being responsible to your community. You know, come out and say what you mean. Even in terms of really good work that's being done, or I would qualify it from the human rights-based perspective that I have, you know, even then there's often this quick hive mind rush to some sort of resolution or some sort of statement. And one of the pieces, and Laura's taking the lead on it, is the reactionizer. So it's the sort of like getting back to the original social network of face-to-face. And so like, what, you know, thinking about how do we start building vocabulary and practice to slow down our reactions? Mm. I mean, not in an emergency situation by any means, you know, but just in general, like there is a lot of value in being thoughtful and in being informed and allowing for a space to build out vocabulary of response. So it's not just like, ha, ha, ha. You know, just really something that is, I mean, I feel like human beings are such amazing, magical creatures that are capable of so many things. There's a lot of space right now to think about how to build in understanding and pace and tempo and not just have everything be so reactive.
Yeah. It's like if the entire album was all one tempo, we wouldn't listen to it. We need the ballad at track four. You know, we need the changing pace of song and metronomes and tempos.
Yeah, absolutely. And even if it is all one tempo, you know, for 45 minutes, is it all one, you know, are you listening to that same like Corrosion of Conformity record, you know, 24/7? You just can't.
How'd you know that I was listening to Corrosion of Conformity earlier?
Your Alexa told on you. No,
that's right. It appears that you have an ongoing relationship with Design Week Portland. You've presented or been involved the past few years, it looked like. Why is Design Week Portland important to you?
I really love the community and the perspective and engagement that it brings to the city. One of the reasons why I kind of keep showing up is that I knocked on the door initially because I didn't feel like sound and sound design was being represented. It often isn't. We have such a strong proclivity to visual design, and then it becomes more about performance. And I was very fortunate that, I mean, North Agency, we put together some programming a couple of years ago, and it was very, you know, thankful that Silly and Kate and everyone were receptive and that was something that people enjoyed. And we've always gotten a really good turnout and response. And I learn about so many things that are happening in the city. I love the open studios component of it. I think it's a really fabulous way to, that feels like a really old word, fabulous. It's like terrific and fabulous are old words, but they're so good. I'm going to bring them back.
It's a fabulous word.
It is terrific is a fabulous word. But it's a great way to learn about who's in the city. Hmm. You know, we all, even in a small, I would say that Portland is a growing, but still sort of a small city. And I always learn about great people doing great things, and also about problems that they're confronting and how do we direct resources across silos to start answering questions for how we make a livable city. You know, there's a problem solving process implicit in design, so it's interesting to like bring that to those questions.
Of all the events planned this year, other than your own, of course, what are you looking forward to the most?
I can't pick one. I don't know how I'm going to do all the things that I want to do. I actually am putting together an itinerary, and I was laughing. I was just like, I might have to clone myself in order to do the things that I want to do. I can't pick one.
What are some of the items popping up on your itinerary?
There's a couple open studios, some workshops. Anything that's dealing with infrastructure in the city, I think, is super interesting. There's a couple things that I wanted to do on the nights that I'm actually doing panels. I know that Swift is doing a mentoring workshop, and I know that there's a great conversation that Randy Gregg is leading about architecture and City of Portland. So it's overwhelming.
Yeah.
There's a lot of good itineraries going up on the website, so people should take a look and they can get some ideas.
You mentioned infrastructure. What role does voice and sound play in a city's infrastructure?
Oh, I love that question. The obvious thing is it's just in terms of urban planning and sound ordinances. I was just involved in a conversation in Austin at South by Southwest around permits and sound permits and what allows a thriving music city to continue to thrive and how that is a point of conflict with developers and does it need to be and what are solutions. So that's one very super specific way that it shows up. And I think you can scale out all the way to, you know, what is the sound of a city or what is the voice of a city? How do we allow autonomy for different groups and different cultures and think about some of that? Like, I'm always interested in if sound and listening and voice offer an unused point of engagement and some potential modes for working through conflict. I think that there's a lot of untapped thinking, but it's just there's a lot of capacity for looking at things in a different way when you start thinking about it from the point of view of voice and listening and sound.
Yeah,
that's where I spend a lot of my time, musing on such topics.
Sounds like you spend a lot of your time in deep thought.
Yeah.
So what do you hope people will take away from Design Week Portland?
There's so many things that people can take away from Design Week Portland. I mean, I think meeting people outside of their own rhythm, or actually just getting to spend time with people from their own workplace or family place or neighborhood in different contexts. I mean, one of the main components of our small 1 hour of the whole week is to think about what happens when you pay attention to a specific topic, and it shifts perception and it shifts your reality. It shifts perception of what actually you're paying attention to and experiencing. And I think as a whole, that's something that Design Week does for the city.
So what's one book or resource that has impacted your life that maybe you keep going back to?
Oh, that is such a great question. As we both sit in front of our exactly. large piles of books. This is very, very granular, but this is called A Voice and Nothing More. Hmm. It's by Mladen Dolar. I'm not sure if I'm saying that. That's something that actually I think is really funny in terms of voicing and voicing text. Like so much of what, I don't know if you have this, but so much of how we experience each other and the world is via text.
Yeah.
And I've recently realized that there's people that I am in contact with, and actually I would say have some sort of mild friendship or relationship with, and I actually don't know how to say their name because I just look at it. Did you have that happen? I think that's crazy.
All the time. I actually, from a lot of people will ask how to pronounce their names to make sure that I do it right.
Mm-hmm.
And recently I came across this tweet where someone that works in tech wanted people to share like good things that people were building at work. And mm-hmm. someone shared a project that was all about pronouncing people's names correctly so that people could hear their name pronounced correctly.
Yeah.
I thought that was really cool.
It is really cool. That's great. And it's, you know, I mean, it's one thing, like, I'm a big cycling fan, and that's for another podcast. But, you know, it's like there was actually at one point, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to have you do a spit take. There is actually at one point, because it's such a global sport, and then you have people, you know, broadcasters who are trying to commentate, and there'll be someone coming up, and then there actually someone did put together a list of how, like, phonetically how you say all these writers' names, so that when a broadcaster was actually doing a broadcast, they could say it correctly, even if they hadn't heard it, or at least they get close.
Right.
There's also a really great book that I often refer people to called The Sound Studies Reader. And it's a really nice overview of a bunch of essays if people are kind of curious for a starting point to think about sound. And sometimes it's a field that can get a little theoretical and academic, but that's always a good starting place, I think, for people.
Nice. Well, final question for you. What is the sound of silence?
Isn't it "Hello, darkness, my old friend"?
Exactly. I was just thinking about "This is the sound of silence" or something like that. So I thought I'd ask you what that is.
Paul Simon knows everything, evidently. And Art Garfunkel as well. Although, again, that's another podcast. Relationships between band members.
That's right.
But one of the things that I'll just share is that we wanted to do for this event and just don't have the capacity. But I was hoping to try and get some version of an echoic chamber built so that people could step inside of it. And what that is, it just cuts out all sound. So it's all external sound. So it's very, if you've been in a recording studio or you've been in, like, what's called a dead room or radio state, like, that's close to it. But this is something that you actually, like, go in, and it's pretty much the only sound that you start hearing is the sound of your own body. Wow. And the sound of your systems. And John Cage wrote a lot about that, and his experience of first stepping into one. And I just thought that it would be so great to be able to offer that to people, to just have a little bit of time to step into it. But given that we're in a temporary space and we only have a couple hours, we're just going to have to bookmark that and try and build it into something else later on. Yeah. But that would, so even the sound of silence is not so silent.
Yeah. Like, what kind of a impact does that have on someone when that's all you hear is your own body?
It's strange. I think some people would probably really dislike that experience. Hmm. And some people would probably find it fascinating.
Well, Rebecca, thank you so much for being a guest on Getting Work to Work. It's been a pleasure to talk to you. It's been a pleasure to learn more about voice and what you're doing at Design Week Portland. Is there anything left that you'd like to share?
No, thank you for the conversation. And I just encourage everybody who hears the podcast to check out what's happening in the schedule and find something. Often it's just a really great event. So I encourage people to take part.
That does it for this episode of Getting Work to Work. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to this podcast. It means so much to me that you do. Would you be willing to share Getting Work to Work with your friends, other creative professionals, and entrepreneurs? You can send them to gwtw.co or have them search for Getting Work to Work on most podcast platforms. Got a few moments to let me know what you think of the show? Head to Getting Work to Work on Apple Podcasts, click ratings and reviews, and either click the number of stars to rate the show or write a review. Thank you so much. Would you like to be a guest on a future episode of Getting Work to Work, or know someone who should be on the show? Maybe you need some advice or just want someone to say hi to. Drop me a line by sending me an email. I'm chris@chrismartinstudios.com. We've got one more installment of the Design Week series coming up next week. In the meantime, follow me on Twitter @CMStudios. I've got some giveaways coming up next week. You want to keep in touch with ways to win some awesome stuff. Be sure to check out Design Week Portland's website at designweekportland.com and see all of the awesome events that are coming up. It's really going to be a great time in April. I hope to see you at many of the events that are going on. Until next time, may creativity and curiosity fuel your life.